Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello and welcome to Luke's English Podcast and this special series called Marooned with My Music. My castaway today is my brother James Thompson. Since being born in the mid-1970s in the south of England, it's hard to say really what James has been doing for the past 39 years of his existence on Earth. Nevertheless, he is a man of taste, a man of music, and a man of experience. In the 1990s, he studied a combined degree in English and design at a university in Cambridge before becoming something of an expert in wine tasting, wine selling, and indeed wine drinking. Quietly entrepreneurial, James set up a successful t-shirt company in the late 1990s and now works as a freelance designer and artist, with perhaps the pinnacle of his career so far being the logo he designed for Luke's English Podcast. I'm joking, of course. James has contributed design work for various companies and organisations over the years, and as well as being an artist, a designer, a wine enjoyer, a t-shirt maker and skateboarder, James has always been a keen lover of music, both as a drummer and producer and as a collector of vinyl records. And I imagine that having to choose 8 records to take to his desert island has been something of a challenge for him. So let's find out. So, hello, James. Welcome to this program, which is called Marooned with My Music. Are you aware of the concept of the show?
Yep, it's similar to a very popular Radio 4 program, isn't it?
That's right. It's basically the same thing with a few slight changes.
But any similarities are complete coincidences.
That's right. The changes really have been made in order to avoid any potential copyright or legal issues.
We've just completely voided by discussing what it was stolen from.
Okay. Well, anyway, welcome to Marooned with My Music, James. Have you found it difficult to choose 8 songs, 8 of your favourite pieces of music, which will accompany you onto this remote island for the rest of your life?
Very difficult. I mean, these kind of lists are normally 10 things, and I think I'm missing those 2 extra ones badly.
Okay, well, let's see.
Can I just ask quickly, have you got the music from that series?
From that series? Yeah. No, I'm not using that music.
You're not? Oh, it's a shame.
Why? Do you need that music?
It kind of sets the tone, doesn't it?
You can
write something that sounds very, very similar to it.
That's pretty much the same thing. Maybe you need to hear the music to get you into the right mindset, but anyway, imagine that you're going to be marooned on a remote island in the ocean somewhere, and somehow you've managed to extract from the shipwreck.
Pacific Ocean, hopefully, not the Atlantic, because otherwise it'd be freezing.
It could be the Caribbean.
Caribbean, ooh.
Could be. We don't really know.
I think it traditionally is more Caribbean, isn't it, if anything?
It's
Polynesian?
Could be. We don't really know where it is, but it's a remote desert island. Where you've washed up on the shore, you've managed to rescue 8
I suppose they're pieces of 7-inch vinyl, I suppose.
One-sided 7-inch vinyl.
Yeah. 8 records that you have managed to save. I don't know why you were on this.
A lot of these weren't available as singles. I mean, is that being too pedantic?
It is being too pedantic.
And wouldn't it be more likely I'd have an iPod, but the salt water sort of deleted most of them?
The salt water has got into your...
No, I don't want an iPod. I want the vinyl, please.
Okay. You've managed to rescue 8 pieces of vinyl from your collection. I don't know why you were transporting all of your favourite pieces of music across the sea, but you were, and somehow the boat sank, and you've washed up on the island.
Am I the only survivor?
You're the only survivor.
Jesus, what a tragedy. It's, ouch. Who was I travelling with? I mean, assuming, if I was travelling with someone, they're dead as well.
You were just a lone traveller. Maybe on a freight boat. You know, it was a cheap trip.
Cheap package deal.
That's right. And let's not dwell on any of the negative details of this. Basically, it's a concept, okay?
I'm being a bit too literal.
It's an interview programme. So it was difficult to choose 8 songs, was it?
Yeah. I still don't think I've chosen the 8. They might change as we're talking about it.
Okay. Now, you know that basically this is a contrived concept which allows us to just explore your personality, your life. The whole 8 musical choices thing is really just a framework for us to talk about, to just have a deep, insightful look at your life. Are you ready for that?
Oh, God. So you've tricked me into this.
It's been a huge trick. I lured you into this interview with the premise that you would talk about music.
So these interviews are normally done with famous, successful people. I haven't done anything.
Yeah, it's true. I think I will have mentioned that in the introduction to this. Normally there's a sort of, my castaway today is, you know, Burt Reynolds. And then there's something, Burt Reynolds was one of Hollywood's leading men from during the 1970s and 1980s, who've starred in films such as
The Cannonball Run 2,
and other films, maybe something with Clint Eastwood. I don't know. It was Sudden Impact. He starred in a film with Clint Eastwood. Anyway, with you, I think I'm going to have to say James Thompson.
Isn't he in one of the Bond movies?
Burt Reynolds. No.
No, I'm thinking of that one where he's in the Midwest, the Deep South, whatever.
There's a cowboy character.
The Boss Hog type character.
There's a cop. Anyway, let's not talk about Burt Reynolds. We're here to talk about you, James Thompson. And this is supposed to be an assessment of your life, but you're right. You're not a famous celebrity. I mean, in a way you are, because you're famous for being in episodes of Luke's English Podcast. That's a kind of fame. Anyway, so I should normally begin at the beginning. You were born in the glamorous settings of Reading in South England. And
Ricky Gervais is also from Reading.
Ricky Gervais is from there, that's right.
That's about it.
That's the only connection to anything noteworthy about the place. But really, you grew up in West London, in Ealing. What was your childhood like?
I'd say it was really nice, great.
Any
sort of idyllic, more idyllic version of Grange Hill, I'd probably describe it as. Or the Bash Street Kids.
Grange Hill being a popular young person's soap opera.
A cross between the Famous Five and Grange Hill.
Both of which none of my listeners will understand. But basically, it was like a sort of pretty standard, idyllic, like pleasant version of childhood in West London. Okay, and so let's start with your first musical choice. I don't know if this relates to your childhood at all. Let's see, what's your first record?
Well, Luke, my first record, which would be on 7-inch vinyl, because this did come out as a single, is by my first musical love, the first band when I was a kid that really grabbed my attention and that I really enjoyed listening to. You're adjusting my mic. Enjoyed listening to a lot when they came on Top of the Pops. They just, pow, immediately. I liked them, and they stood out, from everything else that was around at the time. And they were the first band that I genuinely said, okay, I'm a fan of this band, which as a kid, I suppose, is a first,
Which band was that?
The band.
You need to tell us the name of the band.
The band was Madness, and the song is My Girl.
looking at me. I didn't want to see the film tonight. I found it hard to say. She thought I'd had enough of her. Why can't she see? She's lovely to me, but I like to stay here and watch TV on my own every now and then. My girl's mad at me. Been on the telephone.
So that was My Girl by Madness, an extract. I don't think I can play the whole thing.
Legally.
Illegally either. But that was an extract from My Girl. Why that particular track? Because obviously they released lots of hit singles, Madness, in the 80s when you and I were both growing up. Why that one in particular? Are the lyrics particularly poignant?
It's a particularly good song. And it's just perfect in every way. No, I don't know. Don't know. Just like, I mean, I wish we could listen to it. We don't actually have the access. Well, we do, but we don't have time.
I'm going to be adding the tracks in later in post-production.
Yeah, you're adding them later. So
Margot's,
I kind of feel like, yeah,
we argued just the other night. If you imagine them all in a pub,
it just reminds me of being 11 years old in London and thinking, you know, this is someone talking directly to me about what life is probably going to be like as a grown-up.
Madness also did a track called Baggy Trousers, which was all about sort of school days and stuff like that.
That might have been a better choice, considering what I was just talking about. But I chose My Girl.
How were your school days? You went to North Ealing School originally, and how were your early school days? Do you remember anything about them?
They were pretty fun. I had some good mates. We used to sort of spend a lot of time roller skating, BMXing, skateboarding, running around, throwing berries at garage doors.
Did you actually do any studying?
Oh, at school. I didn't mind school at that age. It was quite nice. It was quite a nice school. I had some good friends there. It was no real nastiness, to be honest. It was generally all round pretty nice place to go to school, I think.
Okay.
I don't really remember it very well, to be honest.
It was up until... I probably remember more about your life than you do. That was up until the age of about 11. And then, because our dad got a job in Birmingham, working at BBC Pebble Mill in Birmingham, we moved, didn't we? We moved from the built-up area, the hustle and bustle of West London. We moved to sort of middle of nowhere in Warwickshire, right? So... what was it like for you moving to a new school?
So this is a real rags to riches story, as you can tell.
It's more of a town to countryside story.
It was great. I mean, it was great. It was cool. We had lots of, you know, new friends, and we'd play in the lane, which was more of a lane, less of a street or a road like we'd been used to.
Country lane.
Grass verges, and we did the same kind of things. Great fun. I seem to remember it was just summer all the time for quite a long time.
But was it?
Which is good. I had a paper round, you know, I used to ride around the village on my paper round and started going to another school, which wasn't quite so idyllic as the first one. But it was still quite a good laugh.
What was difficult about moving to the new school?
Probably having a slight London accent when all the other kids in school were Brummies. Sort of stand, and it's also starting a year in rather than starting with everyone else at the start. Meant that you kind of stuck out a bit.
So
I was the new boy for quite a while.
And
you kind of get picked on a bit, or you get a bit of undue attention. But I made friends pretty quickly, so I did all right. It was fine.
Do you have any fights at school?
A couple of minor ones, maybe.
Did you win those fights?
Yep. Okay. No, not always. It was not serious. Just the odd, you know, little scrap.
It's quite normal for boys to have fights at school, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, I think I had a pretty good average.
Okay. All right, then. Now, let's move on to song choice number two. What's your second record?
This one is definitely reminds me of the bedroom I had in our house in Solihull. Just, you know, when a certain song reminds you of a certain place.
Yeah.
And
just
this is the Happy Mondays, which were, again, the second band that I really kind of thought, okay, this is the band, this is me all the way through.
They're like representing you, or they speak
in a similar way that Madness had sort of caught my attention And this was the first track on the second side of the tape LP that I actually bought, in Woolworths.
You bought it on cassette?
Yeah, I bought it on cassette. And I went to see them live as well. It was the first gig I actually ever went to at the NEC, which is a huge stadium almost, isn't it?
Do you remember how old you were?
I think I was 15 or maybe 14.
It's quite 15. Quite surprised that you were allowed to go to that gig at such an early age.
It was at the NEC. It wasn't at some sweatbox. You know, it was at sort of a reputable venue.
Yeah.
And I was going with a few mates. And it was just amazing. And Donovan supported the old 60s singer-songwriter Donovan.
And which group are you talking about here?
The Happy Mondays.
Okay.
Shall I shut up and...
No. I want to know more about why you like the Happy Mondays so much.
Well, we went to see them live. They were brilliant. Brilliantly shambolic, I should say. They weren't exactly professional, but they were brilliantly entertaining, and the tune sounded really good as loud as they did, and the bass really, you know, rips through you.
Mm.
And that was when you were allowed to play gigs loud. They've turned it down a bit these days. And it was just great fun, just really good fun out with my mates, and, you know, my first can of beer on the train. Well, not first, but, you know.
Did you have beer on the train?
Yeah, stole a couple of dad's beers, I think, for the journey there, yeah.
So you were, what, 14 or 15?
No, I wasn't. I was 15 or 16.
Oh, okay. All right. And so
I must have had all of two beers that night, you know, crazy. We weren't buying beers in the venue because we were too young.
Mm.
But anyway, it was a brilliant gig, and they're a brilliant band, brilliant album. Your uncle.
When was this?
1989?
No, it's 1992,
isn't it? Oh, no, you're right. 88 is the first album. 1990.
Okay, so...
It's 1990.
Happy Mondays, the album is Pills and Thrills and Belly Aches.
Yep.
I think it was released in 1991, I'll be honest with you.
No, it's 90.
Okay, could be 90, could be 91, but you went to see them live, maybe 1991.
I saw them live in 90, I think.
You saw them live in 1990?
It was the year the album came out, it was the tour for Pills and Thrills.
So you would have been 15?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's listen to this track. What's it called?
It's called Dennis and Lewis, and actually this is the song that Tony Wilson, Google him, had played at his funeral.
Wow. Okay.
And Tony Wilson signed the Happy Mondays. He owned Factory Records, which is the label that signed the Mondays.
Which city do we associate with the Happy Mondays?
Manchester.
Okay, so let's listen to Dennis and Lewis by the Happy Mondays, who are from Manchester. That was Dennis and Lewis by the Happy Mondays, which is your second musical choice there. Do you think that sort of... Do you think that record or that band sort of represents something in particular about your generation? Like compared to, you know, like our parents' generation, they had like the Beatles in the 60s and all that stuff. And then there was like the sort of punk rock generation. And then for us, it was things like Acid House and... bands like the Happy Mondays. Do you think it represents something about our generation for you?
We just want to have a good time. want to have a party. Hey, baby, let's go.
It's party music. We just wanted to have a party. Is that it?
I suppose so. Without the 80s was a little bit pretentious, possibly, or a little bit...
What, with, like, new romantic...
Glossy, very glossy and very style-oriented. And the 90s kind of was more fun-oriented, if that makes any sense, or more getting back to basics and dropping some of the padded shoulder pads and stuff like that.
So there was more substance to it. It was
like... more down-to-earth, but more fun. And, yeah, maybe a bit more real than some of the 80s music.
Okay. Going back to school, this is secondary school now.
Yep.
In Heart of England School in the West Midlands. And what do you remember about your secondary school experience? So after having moved to the countryside and starting at a new school, and you dealt with that fairly well, what were you like as a secondary school student as a teenager?
Probably pretty average academically, certainly not bottom of the class, but not really making an effort enough to be top of the class either. Probably just... I enjoyed some lessons. I generally enjoyed the experience, I think. I didn't really like sport that much.
Was there a particular subject that you found that you were better at than others?
Quite like history, quite like English literature and language, quite like art. Well, I didn't really understand a lot of the... I thought all art had to have some deep meaning behind it. I didn't realise you could just paint anything you like and work out the meaning later. I thought everything had to be conceptual in some way, and I just thought everything had to have a deeper meaning than it needed.
So it doesn't have to have a deeper meaning?
Not really. I think it's better just to do something really good and big and bold and just do something rather than fretting about why you're doing it.
Do you have any artists that you particularly like nowadays?
I'm not really too up on it, to be honest.
But you don't have to be up on it. I mean, you just need to know what you like, don't you?
Put me on the spot there a bit, Luke.
Well, if you had to say an artist or some work that you really appreciate, what would it be? I mean, you don't get to save a piece of art on this desert island, but if you could, what would it be? A little hypothetical.
There's a collage my friend Al Herring made for me. His name is also, well, he didn't make it for me. He had it as part of a show and he gave it to me. He's an artist illustrator known as Mysterious Al. You can look him up on the internet. Graffiti, you know, addicts or whatever they're called. Graffiti, graph heads might have heard of him.
Mysterious Al.
Mysterious Owl. So I've got one of his collages on the wall, and I like that because it's handmade and it's mixed media collage mixed with bits of paint splatters and different all sorts of media in there, and it's framed really nicely.
Okay.
But he's not really traditionally art. He's more, I don't know, it's nice anyway.
Okay, all right, very good. Now, let's move on to your third musical choice. We've had the Happy Mondays, the first one, of course, being... what did we have first?
We had Madness first, then we had Happy Mondays.
Both British bands. What's your third musical choice?
This is where it gets difficult. Am I allowed to say what I've got, you know, as backed up?
No, you just choose one.
Just have to choose one. God, it's hard. Well, I was going to choose the Beatles, because growing up, the Beatles was like a member of the family to us. And they were just around pre-birth. I'm sure we were listening to the Beatles in the womb. So I really wanted to choose a Beatles track, but... Everybody chooses the Beatles, and just to be different, I'm not going to, because I can't think of one that really nails it either. They're such a wide-ranging band, and I like them as an albums band, and I like bits of their albums. Like, I like the second half of Abbey Road, and I like bits of Sgt. Pepper, but I don't like other bits of Sgt. I don't know, they're a band that I'd like to make a best of and take that with me.
The Beatles.
Yeah, the best of the Beatles, my version, which would be all the weird ones, like I Am the Walrus, and most of Magical Mystery Tour, I prefer to almost anything else they've done. I like the weirder stuff they did. The more psychedelic, the better for the Beatles, I think. But I'm not going to choose it, I'm sorry. I'm not, I'm going to go with Black Sabbath, Hole in the Sky.
All right, now just tell me a little bit about Black Sabbath before we play this track, would you please?
They're another band that kind of, you know, when you first hear them, you think, wow, and they really make an impact on you. Well, they did for me anyway. they're just incredible. There's no one else like them. They're not heavy metal, despite what a lot of people think. They're heavy rock, based in blues rock, but then sort of pitched down a bit into sort of the devil's key, whatever that is.
I think it's D minor, isn't it?
D minor.
Augmented D minor 7th or something. Yeah. D minor 9th.
Satan's Own. And they're a unique entity. I think almost they kind of prove the existence of channeling, where people say that, you know, it's almost like a force flowing through them when they create something. Is that what it's called? Not channeling. What's the word for it?
I don't know.
It's almost like you're the medium and it's flowing through you. Because a lot of them, they've said many times that when they were knocking these songs out, they just came out of them trying.
That's what all musicians say. Mm. They say that when they're really...
On the money.
Yeah, when they're really in the zone, they're creating music, that they're not authoring it. They're just allowing the music to come through.
Yeah.
So
Sabbath, I like that. A very primal band. And a lot of people probably sneer at them, but I think they're immensely powerful.
More than you could ever imagine. And this track is called Hole in the Sky.
Yeah, it's not an obvious choice. It's just one I like at the moment. I might change my mind about this tomorrow, but right now I would choose this one.
Okay, so here it is, Black Sabbath, Hole in the Sky, from Birmingham, nonetheless.
Aston in Birmingham.
Ozzy Osbourne on lead vocals.
Tony Iommi, guitar.
Geezer Butler on drums. And another bloke.
No, Geezer Butler on bass.
Oh, really?
And Bill Ward on drums.
Okay, all right, here they are then, Black Sabbath.
Take it away.
Pretty heavy stuff there from Black Sabbath.
I'm just imagining, you know, it's going to be on a desert island. There's bound to be some kind of stormy conditions from time to time.
Yeah.
I just imagine in the middle of a thunderstorm blasting that out on my island and just generally being at one with nature.
Right, so it's a good chance to just celebrate the
latent power in nature.
Right, okay. Just going back to your teenage years.
Do we have to?
Yes, we do. That's the whole idea of this show. It's a candid exploration in...
Candid
exploration through the bowels of your life. And so what were you like as a teenager, James? I mean, listening to things like Black Sabbath and stuff like that, it seems quite heavy and a bit dark. Was there a... Do you ever have dark moments?
No. Do you have dark thoughts?
No, but as a teenager, what was it like going through all those changes that one does at that age?
Probably pretty much like it was for everyone else.
Which means?
You know, slightly awkward at times, but generally all right.
Yeah, were you sort of were you a difficult teenager? Or?
Yeah, I think I probably was.
Okay.
You'd know more about that than I do.
Okay, everyone listening to this, he was a bloody nightmare. Okay. Moody, you know, he used to answer back, he'd hide in his room playing loud music. He was antisocial. It was awful, basically. So what was running through your troubled mind during that period? Was it troubled, or was it basically all right for you? Were you just like, I'm having a great time, just leave me alone? What was going on?
Jesus. I don't know. Bloody hell. I'm going to storm off in a huff now.
That's what he would have done. at that time.
Just leave me alone.
Just leave me alone. So unfair. Anyway.
That's the Kevin the Teenager from... yeah, if you want to know what I was like, look up Harry Enfield's Kevin the Teenager on YouTube and you'll see me as 18.
Harry Enfield was a comedian on TV and he used to do a character called Kevin the Teenager, who was like the very typical, unreasonable, moody young teenager. Yeah.
But then again, around about the same time, I really started getting into skateboarding quite a lot. So that got me out of the house, probably burnt off a bit of aggression and saved my life.
Okay. Shall we hear your next musical choice?
Okay.
Tell us about it.
This is by the Beastie Boys, who are a great band. I mean, it sounds a bit ridiculous, but they're a bit like our Beatles of our generation, you could say. Because they were certainly the sort of... All right, that's a slight exaggeration, but they always seem to be... Well, I'll close that. I don't know. Can we delete that bit?
No, you can't delete it. No,
I'm just. But
what I think you're saying is that as the Beatles were sort of cultural ambassadors, and they sort of
cultural leaders,
innovators.
They sort of led, but they also reflected what was going on at the time. Really, more than any other band I can think of.
They were kind of alternative to culture, and yet sort of leading culture at the same time.
Yeah, but also it felt like they were part of you, whatever you were doing. You kind of thought you get them, and they'd probably think you were all right, or you're on the same wavelength. Basically.
So it's that same feeling that you got from Madness and from the Happy
Mondays.
I suppose
it is, in a way.
You got it from the Beastie Boys, but they were from the US, originally from New York. They lived in Los Angeles, though.
They're very male, aren't they, these choices?
Well, yeah, they're all male musicians. But they played sort of like hip-hop, and they played punk rock. And
yeah,
they
all the best things in life.
Yeah, okay, so which track are you going to play to us? Hello?
Am I thinking of the right one? So What You Want.
So What You Want.
Which is off...
That one.
Yeah, can we
so
have a listen
you,
to
what
it?
So What You Want, that one.
Yeah, that okay. one. I'm sure everyone knows it, but it's off their best album.
Check Your Head.
Which is closely followed by Ill Communication as the best two albums.
Check Your Head, released in 1992, was a sort of landmark kind of crossover album between punk rock and hip-hop. There were white guys doing hip-hop with a rock, sort of punk rock aesthetic.
And also they had double bass and slightly slower, cooler, funkier stuff.
They had sort of jazzy, funky sort of stuff as well.
And also that album just sounds amazing because it was all recorded on old analog gear and recorded onto tape. So it's got that old school funk, slightly distorted in the studio sound, which you just cannot fake. And a lot of it was taken from live takes and then chopped up later. Okay. Like I found Ad Rock did a lot of that. They'd have these long jams and then he'd cut them up later and make the riffs out of the jams.
Okay.
Base the track around that, then add, you know, put a beat over the top, whatever, put some scratching and guitars and whatever else, and you've got an amazing, you know, head-checking mixture.
Okay. So this is So What You Want by the Beastie Boys from 1992.
Well, just pulled me in, just like I was Eddie Harris. She eating crazy cheese like you would make up a parent. You know I get high, you think I get high. You know that I'm bored and I'ma tell you all why. Tell me, are you missing? Maybe I'm missing the reason that you smile in the world. And so listen, in my head I just wanna take them down. Imagination said loose and I'm gonna shake them down. Let it fall like a
So that was the Beastie Boys, of course. So What You Want, 1992, Check Your Head.
I said, where'd you get your information from, huh? You think that you can front when revelation comes?
Yeah, you can't front on that. So what you... Anyway.
The drum and bass sound on that is so effective. Which I've tried to copy in a couple of my tunes, actually.
Really?
To weak effect, but it's definitely one of my favourite sounds.
All right, then.
That sound of that album.
So you managed to get into university, didn't you?
I did, unbelievably. I think I did all right at the exams. I was okay. I mean, I did quite well on my GCSEs. Then I got about... How many A-levels did I get?
Well, you got... I think you got two or three.
I got pretty good A-levels, I think.
Yeah.
Average. Medium. I think right. I got one A at... A C and a D or something like that.
So sort of what level of university did you end up in?
I didn't have a clue what to look for in a university. I really felt completely clueless. I was encouraged to apply for somewhere, you know, sort of posh and prestigious like Oxford or Cambridge. And I probably should have done because you never know. I might have got in, you know, might have had a chance. What are you doing?
I'm just moving the microphone.
You told me to touch my chin.
I'm moving the microphone so that...
You told me to hold it there.
Yeah, but... Yeah, that's right. Just speak right into the end of it there.
Right, like that.
That's it. Okay. Exactly. Brilliant.
So, is this suddenly much louder now?
I'm sure everyone likes you more now.
What was I saying?
So
I should have applied for a really prestigious university, but the whole idea just sort of really put me off. And I didn't... It felt completely alien to me to go to some of these amazing universities. Yeah. And I just wasn't... that focused on that kind of thing. So I ended up going around a few places and I just picked one I liked the feel of, I liked the look of, I liked the town. Because obviously at college, you've got to have been a good student-friendly town.
Yeah.
So I chose Cambridge and I went to Anglia Polytechnic University.
So wait a minute, you went
it's actually quite a good college, I'll have you know.
So you didn't go to Cambridge University?
No.
You went to a university in Cambridge?
But I didn't actually try to get into Cambridge, so for all I know, they would have welcomed me with open arms.
Well, to be honest, you couldn't have got in because you didn't have the grades.
Didn't I?
No, you needed like three A-level A's.
I didn't think it was quite that strict. I thought they let the odd chancer in, you know, to keep the place interesting.
No, they need like top level grades to qualify for their courses. That's why you didn't go to Cambridge.
Well, all right. I don't think that's strictly true. I don't think you need all A's.
I think you do.
Can we check? Can you check? Can someone check that, please?
Wait a minute. I'm going to pause it and then... Oh, I can't be bothered to pause it.
We'll come back to that.
I'm pretty sure that to get into Cambridge University, you need like all A's across the board in all your subjects.
And I say you don't.
Okay,
necessarily. Well, it's a help, but I don't think... Anyway, let's move on.
So you got into university, and how about your university time?
It was...
Living away from home in Cambridge?
Yeah, I mean, I did live in a really grim part of Cambridge, actually, for the first year, called North Arbury, which you can look up on Google Street View if you want, Arbury in Cambridge. And you'll see it's not quite the dreaming spires that Cambridge is known for. It was extremely grim and depressing, and me and this guy I'd never met before, we're living in lodgings, which means you're living with a family. And I was living with this old couple and another student called Neil, who was another Midlander, as it turned out. He was from the other side of Birmingham. And we got on great, but didn't really encourage each other's work rate very well. And I did have a very good time at university, too good a time, so much, in fact, that I got an incredibly crap grade at the end of it. But, you know, what can you do? You can't go back, can you? But
You can.
Well, I could go back. That would be a bit weird. I'd be a mature student, one of those creepy mature students.
Mm-hmm.
It would suit me perfectly.
So, all right.
It was fine. I did all right. I got my degree, just a really, really bad one.
What did you study?
Weirdly, a combination of English and graphic arts, a split degree, which is unusual but not impossible.
English literature. And graphic arts.
And you can do modules from both subjects to build up your degree.
What do you remember doing on the English side of things? What do you remember reading?
We did the usual stuff like media studies. That's always quite interesting.
But didn't you read any particular texts?
Oh, yeah. I read quite a lot of the romantic poets. And I read like John Donne. And he's quite good. And... I think who I particularly like is William Blake. He's very good. Check him out.
William Blake.
But overall, I was far more focused on having a good time all of the time.
Okay.
As it's, that's a Spinal Tap reference.
Spinal Tap is a comedy film, which I will tell everyone on Luke's English podcast about at some point. Let's have another musical choice. This is, what, number five now, is it?
Yep, I'm running out of options, and I've got too many left in the few that we have left, and I'm going to have to ditch some. It's going
to
be horrible.
You've only got time to rescue another four records, so what's number five then?
Well, I'm just going to take them as they come. Number five is A Tribe Called Quest with... Clap Your Hands, I think that's what it's called. Can we check?
Okay, let's check.
Brothers know the flays when the quest gets loose. Slamming sucker duckers like the wrestler Zeus. Crazier than Tupac in the flick on juice. Cock is longer than a hat worn by Dr. Seuss. Love a girl in Daisy Dukes like the kids called Duke. Kids paid to sex a hoochie like my main man Luke. Control the mic like Denzel on the girls. Whack MCs beyond the nuts like Rocket J's girl. The worst thing in this world is a sucker MC. Favorite rap group in the world is EPMD. Can't forget the daylight due to originality. And if I ever went solo, my favorite MC would be me. If I talk up in the house, I give a shout out to Snoopy. Peace to all the questions, to hell with the groupies. Like Rafa Samazi, Brooklyn to Dodger, Laverne to Shirley, Rerun to Roger, Rent to the Stimpy, Guru to Hardy, Q-Tips and Piper. The party, kick the rhymes and more rhymes, kick the beats and more beats. We'll have you scratching in your head like Shaheen on techniques. For those who wanna oppose and take a stand, but for now, just shut your shit and clap your hands.
That'll suit you. So listen, the abstract intuition is very, very worthy. I could fill you out from Russia to Jersey.
So that was A Tribe Called Quest with Clap Your Hands.
What a gem.
So why that one?
Just a brilliant album, brilliant tune. The lyrical flow of Fife being this like cheeky sort of like character, and then Q-Tip being really smooth and slow. And they just had a lot of personality, some amazingly good beats that I think Q-Tip made. And they're just sick, man.
Sick meaning good, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, that's a bit of London slang.
But wouldn't you agree, that's one of the best albums of all time?
Oh, yeah. The album is called Midnight Marauders by A Tribe Called Quest, released in 1993.
We're going chronologically. That's a bloody miracle.
We are vaguely
apart
going...
from Sabbath.
We're going in vague chronological order here, and also vague chronological order in your life as well.
Yeah, that's the way we've tried to do it.
You did your university thing. You had a very good time all of the time. You emerged from college with a you managed.
Let's brush over that. I got a degree.
You got a degree.
Just leave it like that.
Let's say that. And so, what was the next move? You stayed in Cambridge for a while. You launched a T-shirt company, I believe.
That was later. In between that, I worked in a wine shop in Cambridge.
Uh-huh.
Oddbins.
Okay.
And I learned about wine. I did some wine courses. Did a lot of wine tasting.
A lot of wine drinking?
Yep. I did my WSET exams, which is Wine and Spirit Education Trust.
Okay.
To be honest, I didn't really know what else to do with my life, but it was really good fun learning about wine and drinking it. So I did that for a couple of years.
Where did you work then in the wine shop?
I worked in Oddbins in a few of them. Pretty much all the Oddbins in Cambridge. There was about three or four of them. And I worked in King's Parade, Parker's Peace. What the hell was that one called? That I can't remember.
Anyway, different wine shops in Cambridge.
A few different wine. There was two on one street and one somewhere else.
Okay.
And it was mainly just selling students booze all day. And drinking wine. So it wasn't a hard job. And we had a really good stereo in the shop.
You can see where your priorities are.
Okay.
Oh yeah, but they had a really good stereo. The pay was terrible, but the stereo was brilliant.
Pretty transparent, aren't I? But the stereo was from Richer Sounds, which anyone who lives in the UK will know is the best place to get your stereo from. They're an independent stereo hi-fi specialist that sell a lot of Cambridge Audio.
Cambridge Audio,
absolutely enough.
Cambridge Audio, a British manufacturer of
amps.
amplifiers and stuff.
And I think I had Wharfdale Diamond speakers. Wharfdale's are really nice speakers.
Okay.
So what all you need for a good sound system is a Cambridge Audio amp, your Wharfdale speakers, and they're quite cheap. They're not that much. And then your CD player or whatever add-on of choice. If you want to be a complete fool, plug your iPod into it, but it won't sound as good.
No, you've got to go with a bit of vinyl that you've rescued from the ocean.
Well, yeah. But in the shop, we didn't have vinyl. We just had a CD player. But we'd play albums all day, just drink wine and talk bullshit. It was great.
Okay. All right. Weren't you concerned about what you were going to do with your life? Or were you happy to just sit around selling and drinking wine?
That.
Really? Okay, then. Let's have your next musical choice then, James. And let's imagine you playing this on those Wharfdale speakers.
Which would have happened a lot, actually. This would have been opening up music, because I was a key holder, so which meant I had to lock up and open up in the morning.
Walk the shop.
To work. Yeah, normally a bit late. And then make myself a brew.
What's that?
A cup of tea. And put the speakers on, whack them up a bit, and put on this, which is Aphex Twin from Selected Ambient Works Volume 1. And the track is called X-Tau.
So what? Just before we listen to it, what does this mean to you?
It's just a great tune, isn't it? I mean, it's some of the best bit of electronic music ever made, I think. It's got a very cool sound. It's very analogy sounding. Lots of drenched in analog reverb. He was about 14 or 15 when he wrote this, probably. In his early teens, probably. It's just a great tune. What more can you say? Maybe I should go for a different any Aphex Twin track, but I'll say X-Tau.
We're going to go with X-Tau, which is the first track on the album.
Yeah, which would have been that track I played on the stereo in the shop.
It's the first one that comes on when you play the CD.
Yeah,
and it's
probably immensely popular. I bet this has been downloaded a million billion times.
Yeah, but I know that lots of my listeners know about Aphex Twin. They probably know this track. A lot of them won't.
I bet this is his most well-known track.
No. No, his most well-known track will be something like, what's that famous one with the music video, Window Licker?
No, I bet this is more famous than Window Licker, because even our mum and dad have got a copy of this in the house.
Only because you bought it for them. You're like, you've got to listen to this. This is really important.
The point is they like it.
You were like, mum and dad, like you've got to listen to this album. It's really important. They were like, what about your career? No, this album. Okay, well, let's listen to X-Tau by Aphex Twin, just to give the listeners an idea of what it was like, probably in around 1998 or something.
When you skipped out the college years.
No, we did the university years. You had a good time all of the time.
Yeah.
And you didn't do that much work, but you got a degree, and then you ended up working in a wine shop selling wine and drinking wine as well. And you would arrive a bit late in the morning in the shop, and you'd open the door with the key master, and then you'd put this on the CD with a cup of tea. Turn off the burglar alarm. And then these are the sounds that would be emanating from your Wharfdale speakers in the shop as customers drifted in, students wanting to buy some cheap wine. And they would be listening to this in the shop. And this is it, Aphex Twin, X-Tau. Okay, so that was X-Tau.
Positively ethereal.
Ethereal, mood-enhancing, uplifting, ambient trance music.
I wouldn't say trance music. I'd say EDM.
What's that?
No, I wouldn't really. IDM.
IDM? What's that mean?
Intelligent dance music.
Oh, intelligent dance music. Ooh, it's intelligent. What was so intelligent about that?
I'm only joking. That's what people call it. I didn't make that term up.
Okay. It's just
I'd say it's ambient house.
A house?
Ambient techno. No, it's ambient techno.
Okay.
UK ambient techno.
Sort of thing you can dance to, but it also has a sort of ambient atmospheric quality that you can help you relax if that's necessary. Mm. Like, for example, if it's an early morning and you've just arrived at the shop to sell wine
all
to
right,
students.
Let's not dwell on that. It wasn't a long period in my life.
Okay. Well, what did you do after working in the wine shop?
Then I hung around Cambridge for a while, not doing very much, and then I moved back home, which is always a mistake.
Yeah, moving
back to mum and dad's.
Moving back in with the parents.
Bad move.
How
bad
old were move. You? 20s, 22, 23?
20-something. I don't really remember.
It's a painful experience,
isn't
it?
It's not a good time. I think you did the same thing for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, I did after university. I moved back in with the parents.
Because you kind of run out of money and you need to restart and rethink what you're doing. And it's never a nice experience. It's a backwards move.
Yeah, and also you end up like living under your parents' roof when you've spent 4 or 5 years away from home being your own boss, and then suddenly you're back to where you were as a kid again.
Yeah, in the local pub, which was fun. There were fun times to be had with the local mates that we had around there, but they definitely felt like a backwards move.
Can you tell me about the T-shirt company which you set up?
Yes, a friend of mine from college were chatting one night, and I said, let's start a T-shirt company. And he just went, yeah, all right. And so we went about doing that. And I moved up to Sheffield. And we were quite successful for a while.
Yeah.
We were sold in a few local places, a place called Burrow, which is a cool Sheffield shop. We were sold in Harvey Nichols eventually.
A department store.
The department store. Can't remember which one.
Your T-shirts were available in some shops in London and stuff?
Oh, yeah, they were available in London, yeah.
Okay.
They were available all over the place.
A few sort of notable musicians and rock stars were seen wearing your T-shirts. They were actually filmed, for example, at the Glastonbury Festival. I remember watching...
Yeah, the coolest band in the world.
Travis, which no one really knows about anymore.
They just came and went, didn't they?
Yeah, they were sort of like the Coldplay of their day.
Yeah, they really were.
They never managed to make it to the international levels of
fame.
They
never made it to the next plateau, did they?
That's true. But Glastonbury 2000...
Was it 2000?
It was 2000. I remember we were both watching it on TV at Mum and Dad's house.
Yeah.
It was one of those days when we were holed up in your bedroom watching Glastonbury on a black and white television. And we were watching it, and the headline act of the whole festival, I mean, bearing in mind that these days the festival is headlined by the Rolling Stones and Bruce Springsteen and stuff, the headline act of the festival, they came on, it was Travis, they were singing their big hit, Why Does It Always Rain on Me? And what was he wearing? He was wearing one of your T-shirts.
In fact, that's probably on YouTube. I've never looked that up, actually.
Yeah, Travis.
And he'd adapted it. I mean, it was very weak, to be honest. But the T-shirt was one of those home taping is killing music T-shirts.
What's that?
It's a logo that used to be on the back of record labels. And it's common now. You see them all over the shop. But at the time, I don't think anyone had really done it. I hadn't seen it on a T-shirt anyway. So it's no big deal. But the T-shirts were really high quality. So it was almost like a slightly trashy slogan on a really high quality, well-made, sort of made in UK as well. They were made in Sheffield. They weren't imported from China or whatever. It was really good stuff. Quite expensive to buy. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. He was wearing one of these T-shirts, but he changed it to freeing. Home taping is freeing music.
Did he really?
Yeah, like how ironically unironic.
I bet he regrets writing that now.
It looks retarded.
Now that Spotify and BitTorrenting has taken away all of his earnings from those records,
yeah.
I bet he doesn't think that home taping is freeing music now. Maybe he does,
But he's just done it by crossing out taping and writing freeing in his own badly done marker pen. But anyway, let's not detract from that. Travis were very successful, and
they wore your
T-shirt.
It's
quite weird seeing it on TV, yeah.
Okay.
But the whole T-shirt thing, I don't want to go into great detail. It went slightly tits up, as these things often do. It went pear-shaped. I won't go into the reasons why. But just say, you know, sometimes when you get into business with a friend, it's not always the best thing. And also, I wasn't particularly business-minded, so it got to a stage where I was in the dark, basically, as to what was going on with the business, even though I was in charge of design and my friend was in charge of sales, essentially, is how we broke it down. He did do quite a lot of work. He had a car. He did a lot of legwork. So I can see he might have felt a bit unfair that I wasn't doing my fair share, but there was never really the proper discussion, even though I tried.
Artistic differences.
Artistic differences are also financial differences, you could say. Financial irregularities.
Okay. Right, what's your next musical choice? This is number six now, isn't it? So let's move it along. Number six.
All right. I'm going to go with Goldie and Saint Angel, because drum and bass is another brilliant force of musical force, rather, that I've been really into for a long time since I first heard it. I first heard it in about 93 or something on tape. My friend lent me a Groove Rider tape, which...
Groove Rider's a DJ.
And all we knew about it, well, I wasn't really up on rave or hardcore music, but it was just this name and this incredible music, which I have never heard the likes of before. And it was just when hardcore, which is kind of like Think the Prodigy, rave music, was evolving into jungle and drum and bass, which is a lot darker, a lot more kind of dub inspired, so a lot more minimal, sparse, scary. A lot of it is very dark and really atmospheric, like nothing you've ever heard. And it's really stood the test of time, I think, a lot of drum and bass and jungle compared to house and techno and a lot of other stuff from that time. Sounds really cheesy now.
You could even say it's timeless. Which ironically is the name of the album.
Q Goldie, and this is Saint Angel.
James, I think that a lot of my listeners, some of them will agree with you that that's incredible stuff, but some of them will think that's just scary and weird and dark.
Yeah, well, people like horror films, you can have horror music as well.
Really? Is that
it's incredibly funky. It's dark and funky, I think.
It may seem at the beginning to be brutal and cold and scary, but in fact...
It sort of resolves itself in the last third.
There's a lot of soul and a lot of... sort of this
yearning.
It's like jazz. It's like Miles Davis kind of jazz, yeah. Really. Okay, then.
And it's just brutally hardcore played through a loud sound system, you know. It's like a physical experience.
Yeah.
It is a physical experience.
Okay. So after the T-shirt business and all that stuff, you did move to London, ultimately, and you worked...
Thank God. I actually, probably with the help of my mum and dad, who probably said, come on, sort yourself out, go back to college or something.
Sort your life out, stop listening to this weird music.
Yeah, for God's sake, what's that strange music coming out of your bedroom? So I went back to college and I did a quick one-year course at the London College of Printing, which is in Elephant and Castle, which is a kind of hipster hub now. But there, those days it was a little bit more grimy. Still pretty hipster, though. Did a design course like everyone else, but I'd always been into design. Like, I'd done this T-shirt thing. Sorry, I just dropped my pen.
It's all right. You can pick up the pen if it's really important to you. James just dropped a pen and it suddenly became the most important
thing. Well, I kind of forgot I had to talk into the mic. Anyway, I went to college and I did a graphic design course. I'd already been doing graphics for the T-shirt business anyway, and I was self-taught, so I had a head start on everyone else.
Yeah.
I did some quite good stuff and, you know, kind of definitely one of the better students in there from some of the other stuff people came up with. Met a cool guy called Moto, Japanese guy who Luke is mates with now as well. Went to visit him in Tokyo a couple of years later, and you know, it led to lots of, you know, good times. And I actually, off the back of that
course,
hang on, have we missed out New Zealand? When
got to that yet. Look, I know your life better than you do.
You do.
So after doing the design course, you then sort of
I was living in London, and guess where I was working?
Oddbins, the wine shop.
Yeah, a different one. One in Chiswick.
So you worked at the wine shop again after you did the design course, and you sort of tried to set yourself
up. I started doing the odd few little jobs from home, freelance jobs. I learned website design, taught myself, learned Flash, which is sadly kind of redundant now, but started getting a few bits of work to supplement my Oddbins work. While I was in Oddbins, I met a girl called Anna, who was a Kiwi chick from New Zealand. And after we'd been going out for a while, I want to condense that.
You'd been going out for a while, her visa ran out, so she had to go back to New Zealand, and you went, all right, I'll come with you. Instead of breaking up, I might as well see the world. I'll go to New Zealand. And so you went to New Zealand. You spent 2 years living down under in the Antipodes in New Zealand.
Yep.
So what was it like living on the other side of the world in the Southern Hemisphere for a change?
It was brilliant. Living in Wellington, which is a really cool city. Well, they call it a city. it's very small. It was great. It was brilliant. Lovely place, lovely people. Can't fault it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Got back into skating again. There was quite a good skate scene there. So I had people to skate with. I had some cool flatmates who were a really good laugh. One of them was a chef, so he was always cooking these amazing roasts. Lived in an amazing house called Number 1 Thompson Street in Wellington.
Perfect.
Check it out if you live there. If you live near there, have
Thompson
a look.
Thompson Street.
Number 1 Thompson Street in Wellington.
It was just made for you, wasn't it?
And really? There was a dick, as they say in New Zealand.
A dick.
Shall we all sit on a dick?
A deck.
A deck.
Which is like a kind of veranda, about a sort of a place outside. Where
we'd have big barbecues, and this chef guy would cook big joints of meat. Lots of joints. It was good fun. Good time. I joined a band while I was there called Cop Car.
Sort of punk band.
A pop punk band, or poppy, not too pop.
Okay.
Punk band that were actually quite like now. At the time, they were never really sort of heavy enough for me. I always thought they could have a bit more distortion in there and be a bit wilder, but listening back to it now, I actually like it quite a lot.
Okay. You also did some design work as well.
Yeah, that's a good thing. In the second year, my flatmate left and basically passed me on to her job, which was in-house designer at a group of restaurants and other businesses. So I was really jammy. I basically said, get me an interview. Go on. Even though I hadn't really had enough experience at that stage. And she said, oh, okay, I don't think you've had enough experience though, James. And I went, yeah, but just get me an interview. Go on. So she did, and I got the job and did that for the next year. And that really set me up as a new job as a designer and art worker.
Okay.
Art working is getting stuff ready for print, not just digital. So it's a slightly different set of skills.
Okay, then. Very good. So what's your next musical choice then at this stage? This is number seven.
Going right back to the start, because this was kind of on a par with the same kind of time I discovered the Mondays, probably, at school, because Richard Sexty first played me this album. He was a good friend of mine. I used to skateboard with him.
Richard Sexty.
And he had a cool older brother who had lots of punk and post-punk albums. So he introduced me to a lot of late 70s music. And it was at his that I first heard the Sex Pistols on vinyl with No Feelings.
I'm in love with my
So what's the appeal of that stuff then?
Oh, it's just brilliant, isn't it? Anthemic, you could say, and like doesn't give a toss what you think of it. It's just like going, way!
It's just energetic.
Way!
It's just full of like spirit and
full of spunk. Spunk and vigor.
Okay then. So
and
did you
can hear Steve Jones, he's the guitarist. You could just hear his soul just coming out through that guitar sound.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, and going, I exist, you fuckers.
What was it about the sort of punk music movement that really got you?
Well, I don't like the whole movement. I think a lot of it was crap.
A lot of it was a bit...
Especially when people start talking about the punk movement. That's when you know you're in trouble.
Okay, well...
But individually, I do like a lot of bands. Like, you've got to admit it came from America. The Ramones, the Stooges are all both brilliant. The New York Dolls, brilliant if you like that kind of thing. Johnny Thunders basically inspired Steve Jones to play the way he does on the Pistols records. But Johnny Rotten is just an individual. There's no one else like
him. The lead singer of the Sex Pistols.
John Lydon, yeah. And he's just got so... I mean, he's not a traditional singer, but he's got incredible lyrics, incredible delivery, and just something new, something completely unique.
Okay. All right, then. So after New Zealand, it didn't work out with the girl. You moved back, but you came back with another girl.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't go into that.
I'm not going to go into it in lots of detail, but you did come back to London, and then you continued working in design and freelance stuff.
Yeah, thankfully, I was off the off-license floor. And
stopped working at the shop.
Stopped working at the shop and went straight to an agency, a few agencies, one of which immediately kind of seemed to say, okay, you're going to be an art worker. Because of my print experience, I've done lots of billboards and stuff for these restaurants and lots of print ads and stuff and lots of work with print. So right. You were like, right, you're going to be an art worker. You get good money doing this. I'm going to recommend you to someone. You should start next week.
Okay.
And it was like bish, bash, bosh.
Bob's your uncle,
you're in. And I was in, I won't say the name of the company, but it's a big London agency where I'm a freelancer. I freelance around London in a few different places.
And that's
but
it.
I always can end up coming back to the same one because they always get me work. So
it basically set you up from that point.
It was a kind of artist and designer. Fluky second chance at a career, basically, based on going back to college that second time.
And then a career-defining moment when you designed the logo for the award-winning Luke's English podcast.
Very true. And did I get paid for that?
You got paid in a sort of payment. I gave you beer.
All the best jobs are done for free. There's a good webpage I saw recently. Famous logos and how much they cost to design.
Famous logos and how much they cost to design.
Something like that.
.com.
Something like that. You'll find it. And some of them are ridiculous. Like some of the rebranding of Pepsi was like $1 million to rebrand Pepsi. Which, or more, something ludicrous, like way more, I don't know, like $10 million, I can't remember, something just insane.
You're suggesting that I should have paid you $1 million?
Yeah, yeah. But some of them were designed free. The Nike logo, the Nike swoosh, cost about $22 or something off a freelancer. Wow. It's just amazing the disparity between, prices.
Okay, let's have your last musical choice then, James.
Well, since I'm going to be on this desert island, are we going to get into the luxuries yet? Because we kind of
That's
just talked about this earlier.
After the music.
So what kind of flora and fauna do we have on this island?
Everything, all of the different sort of plants and weeds and things, they all grow on the island.
So hemp might be a growing on the island.
Hemp is a natural product that grows freely on this island, yeah.
One use for hemp, you can make rope from it. So
yes.
I'd want to make a fisherman's net, a fishing net,
uh-huh,
out of coarse hemp rope, hemp fibre, and spend my evenings whiling away listening to my eight records over and over and over again and making a fishing net. And then I would go fishing during the day. I'd wade out into the shallows like they do in, the Caribbean, I suppose, and just catch fish freehand.
Right.
So to inspire me on my task, I'd like, because it's Desert Island, the Congos, which is Lee Scratch Perry's band, and Fisherman. Yo.
That was The Fisherman by the Congos, produced by Lee Scratch Perry in Jamaica.
Living in a bamboo hut.
You would be living in a bamboo hut, probably.
And then there's that really deep voice that comes in at the end. Yeah. The best collie in Seaport Dawn.
Okay. All right, so how are you going to do on this remote island on your own? Are you going to be able to handle it?
I love it. When do we leave? When do I leave?
You leave imminently, James.
I don't know. I kind of think I'd quite enjoy it, but I think the not knowing would get to me. You know, am I ever going to be rescued? Am I going to be here forever?
No one cares. No one's going to rescue you. In fact, everyone's glad. No, I'm joking.
Well, I'd start building a raft pretty much straight away or thinking about it. But I don't know if I'd go out and it would just be something to do. I might be quite comfortable, might be quite happy there. But who knows? Maybe after a few weeks, I'd just crack.
Yeah.
But I like to think I could handle it. It's just with the survival aspect, getting enough calories a day. That would be the hard bit.
Finding food and all that stuff.
But if there was plentiful food and fish and hemp to work with, I think I'd probably be all right.
Okay. So you also get to choose one luxury item. You get a couple of books. I'm going to give you the Oxford English Dictionary and also the complete works of William Shakespeare.
Why not the Bible? That's traditional.
Okay, in the BBC show, they give you the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare. You can have that if you prefer.
I think I'd prefer the Bible to the dictionary, not because I'm religious, but because it's got more of a story.
Okay.
You know, you're going to be pretty bored out there. You need all the entertainment you can get.
Okay, then.
And, you know, you never know, I might turn... might become a god-botherer.
Maybe. All right, so you can have the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare and another book.
Shakespeare would be great. I would be happy with the complete works of Shakespeare. That would keep you going for a while.
All right.
One of the book, I thought about this before, and it's really, really hard, because once you've read a book, you kind of want to read another one. It's not like music that you can keep coming back to like 100 times. You'd only want to read a book maybe 3 times, max. But I'll just choose my favourite book of the moment, which is... or of the last few years, which is Jake Arnott's The Long Firm. And Jake Arnott is a London-based writer who writes about sort of historical events, mainly based in London and Britain, but he writes his own spin on it. He writes about fact as fictional characters, so a lot of his stories are based on real people, but he'll write his fiction around the true events.
And it's sort of the world of organised crime and politics.
Well, it's organised crime, politics, the establishment. There's all sorts of things that touch on things that have been on the news recently, like dodgy rings of people in power doing dodgy things. And it touches on lots of the whole range of society, from lowest society to the high society.
It also includes...
The shadowy underworld of what goes on. And it's quite pulp fiction-y, it's quite pulpy, but it's actually got hidden depths, I think.
It's like crime stories which have, like, extreme significance in terms of, like, actual events and things.
Yeah, and he does people really well. He writes stories from each chapter is from a different person's perspective, and you really feel they are real people, and they have real emotions, and he just writes people really well.
So you could be some good company there on the desert island.
Yeah, and there's a good character called Jack the Hat. Have you read the book?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
The Chigga.
Yeah, he's
a sort of a speed-dealing, old-school gangster that drives around in a Ford Zodiac.
And listens to a lot of reggae music.
Well, he ends up in reggae clubs where he meets his clients, and he's like quite starts to kind of get into the ska music of the time.
Right. Okay, so you're going to have Jake Arnott, The Long Firm, and you also have a luxury item which you can rescue. Which one would you like?
Oh, my God. I hadn't thought about this.
Rizzler?
Maybe my skateboard, please.
Okay.
And I can think about trying to build a mini ramp out of...
hemp.
Out of ply that I find... washed up on shore.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of pollution out there in the oceans, and who knows what might wash up.
Right. You can have your skateboard, just be careful of your shoulder, okay? Don't dislocate it again, because there are no hospitals on this island, unless you make one out of bark or something, I don't know. All right, so there you go. You've had your luxury item, you've chosen your book. Now, unfortunately, there's been a freak storm, which means that all of your records are being washed away, and you only have a chance to save one record that you would like to have.
Oh,
only one. Which one's it going to be?
Oh,
if,
God,
if you
don't
could only
do
choose
this to
one.
Me. Don't do this to me. Well, it doesn't matter because it's not really going to happen, is it? But I still find it really hard to choose.
I'm going to have to hurry you, I'm afraid.
I'll go for the Congos and fishermen because it would fit.
Okay.
It would fit the environment. It's just a really... It's got a bit of everything. It's got a bit of soul. It's got a bit of disco. It's got a bit of rock and roll.
I can imagine you with dreadlocks and you're...
I would grow... Well, I'd grow one dreadlock at the back, maybe. I don't think I'd have so many on the top. But I'd probably be in good physical shape because I wouldn't have any fat on me at all.
No.
I'd probably look great, actually.
Then you would
compared
be
to how I do now.
Working hard with your hemp net.
I'd have a good tan.
And this track,
and I'd have these. I'd sort of probably affected a sort of Rasta style internal monologue. So I'd probably just be like someone crazy, a crazy man.
A Rasta style internal monologue. We're going to go down.
We're going to go down
now.
Beach now.
We're going to get some more fish now.
That's a bit racist, Luke, doing that accent.
I think it is. I think it's all right.
If it was Italian, it wouldn't be racist, would it?
I think it's fine. There's nothing.
Hey,
racist.
I'm going to go down the beach and get some pasta.
Just to let you know, there are lots of Italians that listen to this. I'm not sure if there are many Jamaicans. Anyway, thanks very much for being a guest on this show, which is called Marooned with My Music.
Thanks a lot. It was kind of weird. Don't really feel like I deserve this great honour, but thank you very much.
You're welcome. And thanks.
When do I get to do yours? Can I interview you next time?
Yeah, of course you can, yeah.
Okay, look forward to that, readers, listeners.
You can look forward to that, listeners, if we ever get round to interviewing me.
Okay. Well, thanks, Luke. Thanks for having me on your show. And let's go. Well, I mean, when do I leave?
Any minute now. Okay.
Bye.
Bye then. Thanks very much to everyone for listening. Speak to you again very soon. But for this episode of Maroon with My Music, it's time to say goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.